Blog Talk Radio.
Farewell to fun and joy, sing, sail, and
Hello, everyone.
We are finally back. This is Called to Serve. I'm Daisy Brown, your host. And tonight I have a new co-host, and I'm very excited about that. But before we get started, I'm going to do just a little segment of Black History Month, since February is Black History Month. And today I'm going to talk about the Buffalo Soldier. The Buffalo Soldier was the Black Army soldier who was nicknamed that by the Indians. And on September 21st, 1866, they gave them this name, they said, because of their bulging eyes and their dark skin. They were members of the 10th Cavalry, and they are still recognized today, and I'm grateful that I do know several Buffalo Soldiers. And now I would like to introduce my co-host, Mr. Mitra Davis, and I want to welcome her to Call to Serve. But before I do that, I want to thank our, I don't know what to call her. I call her everything, my daughter, my executive producer, my sister, my friend, but Beverly Black, who is the owner of this magnificent forum. And I really am grateful to be a part of this. So, Beverly, would you like to say something before Demetra comes on?
I just would like to say congratulations to Season 4, Episode 1 of Called to Serve.
Thank you so much. And it's been a good 3 years. I mean, I really had some excellent hosts and, I mean, guests on the show. I mean, really, really great people. And we're going to expand just a little bit more this year to have more of the not just military people, but people who have served in some way. And tonight we have just a couple friends of mine who are dropping in to give us a little bit tidbit, and they are members of the Persuaders, the original Persuaders. And at this time, Demetra, but before I want you to say hello, and then I want them to just say a little something about what they're doing. And then the rest of the night is going to be for you and your wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guest. How about that?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Miss Daisy, and thank you so much, Beverly, for allowing me this opportunity. I am really looking forward to this season, getting to meet so many people and learning so much. About people who have served and contributed to our society, and I am just looking forward to it. So I can't wait to talk to Miss Alexis in a little while, and I'm looking forward to hearing from your guests. So I will not take up any more time, so let's get this show going.
All right. So first of all, we have Vincent Ballard, who is has been with the Persuader for 100 years.
And, I'm almost there.
and Keith Soule, who's also one of the members. So Vince, I'm going to turn
right
it over to
you,
and you can turn it over to Keith.
Hello.
Tell us a little
How
something
going,
about
Daisy?
You, Dot. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're out there. We're still out performing all around the world, and loving it. Health-wise, we're knock on wood, you know, every morning when we wake up. But, yeah, the Persuaders, we've been around, you know, our top hit, Thin Line Between Love and Hate, and many more, Love Gonna Pack Up, Peace in the Valley of Love, Some Guys Have All the Luck, and on and on. But we're just looking forward to this show, which is on the 25th, and this month at Morgan State University. Specifically, I think it's the Murphy Fine Arts Center. And,
that's correct.
Yeah, and we know that the place has been redone. Millions of dollars have been put into it. So it's a beautiful spot. and it'll be our first time performing since that reconstruction. But R&B is still there, you know, straight good love songs and dance songs. Persuaders have many types, and we originated back in 1969, really. We were called the Internationals at the time and had an international hit, not so much in the U.S., but over in England, Germany, and whatnot. The song was called Give a Damn, you know, so it was like a protest thing. A lot of that was happening back then. But we got back to the United States, and we thinned out, took a break, you know, and got caught up in local activities and whatnot, and finally regrouped as the Persuaders. And the rest is history, you know. We had the first release under the Persuaders' name was Thin Line Between Love and Hate. And originally, the song was written Still Waters Run Deep. But Four Tops came out with that before we could actually put it out. And the name was knocked around. What should we change this to? Whatever. It was written by Bobby, Richard, and Jackie. Members, Bobby and Richard Poindexter. Jackie was the wife of Bobby. Her maiden name is Members. And they had written that song. And still writing great songs. And most of the Persuaders hits. So they changed it to Thin Line Between Love and Hate. They said, yeah, we're going to go with that. And the rest is, you know, it just the first song, you know, a lot of guys and groups, single artists put out songs. It takes quite a few to get a hit. But this was the first one under the Persuaders. And it went to number one.
Yeah, I remember that song.
Yep.
Yes, 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Knocking on the door. Who is it? Let me in.
You should have been there. Should have been in there.
That's right. You know? So, you know, Martin Lawrence made a movie about it, the whole thing. I hear there's another Thin Line Between Love and Hate movie coming out. Thin Line Between Love and Hate 2. So we're looking forward to that.
Wonderful.
And, okay.
So, well, Keith, what do you have to tell us, my dear? Other than the fact that we live in the same city.
I'll try to do this in under a minute. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you can hear me? I'll try to do this in under a minute. Well, there's a lot of artists that are still out here today that has done our music over, and I'll name a few. 50 Cent, Jay-Z, Kanye West, Annie Lennox of the Eurythmics, John Legend, Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, Little Bow Wow. And the best thing that I can say, and this guy wasn't at the awards the other night, is everybody paid for using some of the Persuaders' music in their rap songs. But one person, can you guess?
I know.
Kanye West. Kanye West.
Yeah.
He didn't pay.
Oh, yeah.
And he produced the same song first for J.C., and J.C. paid immediately. Kanye won't.
Sure did.
So that's my little tad I had to add to it. A lot of the young kids don't know. A lot of the younger generation, they don't know that a lot of the rap has old school all in it. That's why Snoop Dogg is still alive today in his music, because he loves old school.
Mm-hmm.
And
he
hires us quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Snoop will be around for a minute, I'll tell you that.
Yes, he will.
He's learned how to do it. Well, guys, I want to thank you all for stopping by.
Okay.
And if you want to hang on and listen to our guests, please feel free to do so. And I'm going to give this over to my co-host.
Thank you,
Dee
Dee. Do your thing.
Much.
All right.
Okay,
yeah. And you guys, I'll see you all at Morgan State.
That's
University.
Right.
We'll see you there.
Okay.
Yeah.
We love you.
Daisy,
bye-bye.
I have
to tell your guests,
love
thank you so much for being here. I am a big, big fan, so thank you guys for being here. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. We appreciate you having us on.
Yes, thank you. And okay. I am looking forward to having this conversation this evening with Miss Alexis McCray. She is a United States Air Force veteran, and she is also a mental health specialist, a provider, and I will let her tell you about her credentials. But Alexis, can you hear me?
I
want to make
yes,
sure
I can
hear you as well. Okay, wonderful. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on here. And
thank you for inviting me.
Yes, yes. I am so excited that you are here and that we can just talk and learn more about you and what you're doing out in the community. I am so excited. So, of course, this is Call to Serve. So I think I'd like to start out by finding out what you did while you were in the military. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So I served 11 years on active duty. I was in the Air Force, like you said, and I joined when I was 17, straight out of high school, and I separated in the summer of 2017. I did one deployment in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom to Kuwait in 2010 as well. My job was, I was called a personnelist, but some other people know it as a human resource management.
Okay. All right. So you were over in Iraq.
I went to Kuwait.
Okay. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I am glad that you came back home safely. So thank you very much.
Yes,
amen, amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
You know, it doesn't matter how long the deployment, you know, I'm so glad that you made it back home safe.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the different places that you were stationed. You said you were in for 11 years?
Yes. I started out at Grand Forks Air Force Base in North Dakota. From there, I went to Aurora, Colorado, to Buckley Air Force Base, and then I concluded at Randolph Air Force Base in San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
And so I remained in, I stayed in San Antonio till I finished school, and then I relocated to, El Paso in 2019.
Okay. All right. So a little bit in common there, yeah.
Yes.
And El Paso, that's where your clinic is, correct?
Yes. So fortunately, I got into mental health while I was still on active duty. That's when I started actually going to school. And I got my license in Texas. I'm also licensed in New Mexico for mental health therapy. And fortunately, Texas changed their law for licensed professional counselor associates, and I was able to open my private practice in March of 2022. And it's called Elevated Horizons Mental Health.
Wow. That's wonderful. So your credentials, you're a licensed professional counselor?
I'm a counselor associate here in Texas, yes. Which means I'm still under supervision and I'm attaining my hours, but I am licensed.
Oh, okay. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So, So was there something about being in the military that actually made you want to go into mental health?
I think my interest began probably early on in my military career, or it was probably in high school. Once I joined the military, I was trying to think about, well, what am I going to do after the military? Because I originally planned to do 20 years. However, I was like, well, I still have plenty of time to do something else. And so I was trying to research, you know, kind of what I wanted to do. And my interest initially did start in psychiatry, but I was like, I'm not going to medical school. so I looked into some other avenues, and I found that counseling was the best fit for me.
Okay.
And a part of what I did experience in the military, I did experience some mental health and mental wellness issues while I was serving. And mm-hmm. I recognized that our options were limited in how we got care or where we were seen, and the options that were available on base were even more limited.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of misunderstandings about, you know, the military lifestyle, the military culture, and I felt like we were really mislabeled.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
A lot of the issues were seen as, of course, they're really seen as transitional, you know, like, yeah, you'll feel better once you get out of here, or, you know, once we send you over here, you know, things will change.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that we're pretty much just, you know, passing off these serious issues and they're not really being resolved. And I wanted to be a change in that.
Wow. That's really beautiful. And that's a strong statement, wanting to be a change in that, because, you know, you're looking at a huge, big system, the military, and wanting to be a change in the military, that's big. And you're right.
Yes.
You know, that's a statement that's said so many times, even it's outside of the military and it's inside the military, you know. One, you know, get over it. But two, you know, it will change once you leave. And but three, I think a big thing with mental health with the military is that we really rely on the camaraderie that we have while we're in the military. We rely on that, and we rely on it more than we realize. The small things are really big things, like going to the commissary, going to the BX. You know, those are things mm-hmm. that you almost take for granted until you're out. And then it's mm-hmm. like, oh, you know, now I have to think about where I'm going to go to get my groceries. I got to think about that. I got to think about, you know, where I'm going to go and pick these things up. And it seems mm-hmm. like, oh, that's no big deal. But it's a big deal because you are outside and exposed now. You're not in your little community. So
mm-hmm.
I think unless you've been in the military, it's so hard to relate to what that feels like. It's really difficult to relate. Yeah.
I agree. So, and a lot of the mental health professionals that work with military and veterans, they don't come from military and veteran backgrounds or
mm-hmm.
law enforcement backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they receive, you know, very – you know, extensive education, and they're highly trained in what they do, but none of that education is in the military lifestyle.
Right.
And I feel like that's where we have a really big disconnect, because what we see as you being very well trained as a soldier, someone in the civilian sector is going to see, well, you know, they're going to see that as possibly anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, you know, we're taught to be just a little bit more diligent and, you know, to check mm-hmm. for different things, and civilians mm-hmm. aren't as aware of what those things are and what those things look like, mm-hmm. you know, especially if we come from, you know, any special forces, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's even further misunderstanding.
Right. Yeah. They'll probably see you as being hypervigilant. You know, we're really, you're trained to be very aware, you know, aware of
exactly.
your surroundings. You know, So, yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I really admire people that are in your profession. As a registered nurse, we rely on your profession so much, especially now resources are so scarce that the acute care settings are inundated mental health patients.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's not the correct setting for, you know, that particular patient, but resources are just not there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I am grateful for what you do, and I guess, you know, it's a great segue to talk about your clinic, your service, what you have. So I know it's in El Paso. It's Elevated Horizons. Love the name. Elevated
Thank
Horizons.
Thank you.
Health. Love that. So tell us about it. Tell us what you do. What you do there.
So I was motivated to start an actual mental health practice because of the challenges I faced with trying to find employment after I left the military. I got my license in April of 2020, which of course was right at the beginning of the pandemic. So mm-hmm. employment was challenging for everyone everywhere. But interesting enough, even in the mental health field, you know, we unveiled the mental health crisis that we're in. And, you know, nationally, we're at a deficit of over 3 million mental health providers to take care of the mental health needs of everyone in our country. And I wanted to give us space to do more healing. I wanted another mm-hmm. avenue or an opportunity for somebody to find help, you know, by somebody who comes from a similar background and understands the culture. And so my biggest focus has been on serving military and veterans, anybody in the Department of Justice, law enforcement, first responders, you know, any of our healthcare heroes. Those people in particular, I have wanted to, you know, make sure I created a safe space for, because they have held us up for years. And yeah. I think it was just further exacerbated by, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic. However, you know, when we seen, you know, all these hospitals flooding and these morgues flooding and things like that, there was no time to get mental health support. You know, while the nurses are working 12, 14, 16-hour shifts and, you know, our law enforcement officers, they're maxed to capacity. And, you know, here being on the border, like our Customs and Border Patrol officers, like, they're exhausted.
Yeah.
And, wow. you know, there's, of course, EIP programs and things like that, but there's always the fear of the repercussions of it interfering with your career, which is also right. another common thing, you know, with the military and obtaining security clearances, you know, and being able to be moved to certain locations. Those mm-hmm. things are very important to keep intact.
Right.
So
right.
that's another reason why I wanted to ensure that, you know, anybody, you know, who's military or, you know, first responders of some sort, you know, they have an outlet, but mm-hmm. I'm not connected to any of those facilities or any of those organizations. So the confidentiality is different.
Right. Right. I would like to, first I'd like to see if my co-host has any questions. I'm kind of talking you to myself. Stacey, do you have any questions for our guest here? Are you good? I think she's good. Okay. And okay. then
well,
I
would just like to add that the only the biggest things that I wanted to do to make my business stand out was that I got my business recognized by the state of Texas as being historically underutilized. because I am Alaskan Native. And to my knowledge, I have the first Native American-owned mental health private practice here in my state.
That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Woman-owned, minority, Alaska. That's wonderful. That is wonderful. And providing a service like you are. That's wonderful. So I'm curious, knowing that, do you find, because we know that, you know, there is a stigma that comes with mental health, do you find that the stigma exists across the board culturally? Does that happen with within your culture as well?
Yes.
It happens in my
it does. What I see is, I guess where I live, it is mostly Mexican, people of Mexican descent that are mostly here. And it is challenging, you know, discussing mental health with them, because I believe there are some cultural barriers as to, you know, well, how come you can't push through? You know, how come you can't, you know, just get over it, or you can't forget about it, or, you know, it's similar things like that. In the Native American community, what I see is a mistrust. I have struggled with connecting with people of Native American descent in the various places I've lived, because there's Native Americans in North Dakota, they're in Colorado, you know, they're here in Texas, and Native Americans are very mistrusting of anybody who is not from that community. And
of physicians, of therapists, or just any outsider?
Any outsider.
Yeah.
Just because they
yeah.
know you're not a part of the community and they're very close-knit. They don't have many communications with anybody outside of the community. So in order for you to even develop that type of trust, you would have to visit reservations and actually spend time with them, you know, so you aren't viewed as a threat.
I got you.
Because
okay.
unfortunately, okay. at the start of this country, there was a lot that occurred, and there were a lot of lies told, to put it nicely, towards Native Americans.
Right.
So those are substance abuse.
Yeah.
Excuse me, ladies.
Yeah.
I think that we might want to take a pause. I'm not sure if we have something that we – I do want to have one song played before we go out to the end. So if my darling Beverly Black would put my song on for me, please, Buffalo Soldiers. I forgot to ask her to do it right after I did the little dissertation. And if that's possible, and do we if we have any other commercials to give you ladies a chance to catch your breath, because I'm enjoying this. I really am. It's exciting, and, you know, people need to know about mental health, because at some point things hit each and every one of us, that some more than others and some worse than others at the same time. We need to know how to reach out and where to reach out and why we should reach out. Because some people, they're ashamed, or they feel like, well, somebody's going to call me crazy or whatever. Yeah. And that's not necessarily the thing, you know. You don't. It's a pride thing, and we need to get over that, especially men, because they have so much pride. And it's just a shame, you know. Get over it. Go get some help.
We are all people. That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Okay, Miss Alexia, we're going to hold on.
You may.
In this new land. they call you, you remain. In the 1800s in Arizona and Mexico, called him Buffalo. Prison camps and slavery, all the black man came to be. He was a hard-riding hero of the 10th Cavalry. You know many of the soldiers thought they wanted to desert. They were tired of the hatred, yes they were. They were so tired of the hurt. Some of them were tired of the killing and all.
Oh,
time and thank you right here. Buffalo soldier,
Buffalo soldier,
if you only listen to me. Oh Lord, been a long, long time. I wonder, will you survive in this land? Oh, Buffalo soldier,
tuned in to Call to Serve, co-hosted by Daisy Brown and Demetra Davis, Season 4, Episode 1. Call to Serve Anthology is under development under Gumbel for the Soul Publications. Visit GumbelfortheSoulInternational.com for details.
Are you thinking about writing and or publishing a book but need help navigating the process? Path to Publishing is here to chauffeur you along your book writing and publishing journey. Visit us at www.pathtopublishing.com. That's two, T-O, the word, not two, the numeral. www.pathtopublishing.com.
I believe that's it. I do want to say that July 27 is Buffalo Soldier Day, and I just learned that today. So I'm looking forward to that this year. I will be celebrating it on July 27. And now Demetra and Ms. McCray, our guest, the lines are yours.
All right. Thank you so much. I love that
song. Thank you.
I love that song. That was beautiful.
I do, too.
That was beautiful. Okay, Miss Alexis, so we are back. We are back. And I want to just continue our conversation, you know, talking about mental health and how, you know, people can, I guess, view it differently. I really would like to just break the stigma that people have surrounding mental health. I think that's important. So, you know, are there certain types of diagnosis, I guess, or, you know, patients that you actually work with, or do you work with a full spectrum of mental health diagnoses?
I do try to keep a wide range and variety.
Okay.
Most commonly, it's depression, anxiety, general counseling, life transitions like separations, divorces, employment transitions, or birth of a child.
Okay.
Also, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, parenting, grief, military and veteran issues, and moral injuries are typically my most common, you know, issues that bring people to therapy.
You know, that's interesting. I don't think people really would think that, you know, like the birth of a child would be something that they would need counseling or help over. But, you know, that's such
yes.
a huge change in your life. And I appreciate having that. You know, I've only had one daughter, and she's 31 now. Thank you, God. I love her.
Congratulations.
Tell you what, when she was born, you know, I felt like I was getting luggage together every time I had to leave the house. And it was just, you know, going from just walking out the door to carrying all this stuff. So it is
mm-hmm.
a huge change. I mean, everything changes. So I can appreciate that. I think that's wonderful.
It is.
That's awesome.
And mental health really does start in the womb. And
yes.
I wish there was
yes.
more information on infant mental health and, you know, early childhood mental health, because, you know, you have your baby. Some people have them in hospital settings, and, you know, you find your primary care doctor and you pursue, you know, those regular checkups, you know, to make sure they're developing as they should, you know, throughout their upbringing, getting immunizations and things of that sort. However, the mental health aspect and development of that same child is completely neglected in that process.
And so
when babies are born premature and they're in incubators or they're born sick and they have to be hospitalized for their first 3 or 6 months, that impacts their mental health and how they mm-hmm. are able to attach and how they're able to self-soothe, because they came out of the womb and they didn't have that physical attachment, and they don't have that smell of their mother or their father. So develop hyper-awareness within themselves because they feel like they have to keep themselves safe now.
And so
the impact of that infant of having to keep themselves safe already it changes everything. And so we already know, you know, developmentally, yeah, some kids will be delayed in their speech, you know, or, you know, you may find out later that, you know, they have difficulties with their hearing and things like that, but no mental health support throughout any of that.
That's
and
so
it's either even with the kids or for the parents, there's no mental health resources even provided at that appointment. And that's very scary.
You know, it is scary. As a society, we all pay for that. You know,
mm-hmm.
that affects all of us. But that
mm-hmm.
is scary. You know, I just think about myself. I really, as a nurse, I have worked in a hospital that has a very large number of births every year, and I've never thought about that part of it because there were so many premature births, and I always think about the outside, you know, the outside
mm-hmm.
development. So I have been guilty of that myself, and I'm very grateful for, you know, my own personal growth as it relates to mental health. You know, we're all growing and evolving, and thank God for that. But that is
mm-hmm.
something I know back in my days at that hospital, that's what I thought about was, you know, the hearing, the vision, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, even their ability to, when will they walk, when will they talk, you know, those types of things. I really
did not think about the mental health part of it. And that's huge, though. You know, that's huge.
It is.
And
it is.
Yeah. You think about, like what you're saying, them wanting to protect themselves. That's amazing. But, yes, I mean, that's something that I would think is innate that goes along with, you know, the fight or flight and things that we, you know, are we want to protect ourselves. And if there's nobody else there to do it, then yes, you know, that's amazing. And
it even goes into with, because we're learning more and more about postpartum. But if you're having your child in a hospital setting, that should already be screened.
Yeah.
And you should already be able to get the help with that, because chances are your mental wellness declined during the pregnancy.
Wow.
It doesn't, it's not like, you know, there was a switch that went off, you know, just as the baby was coming out.
Right, right.
And then, of course, you know, naturally things do change after the baby comes out, which further exasperates things, you know, if you're already on a downward hill. You know, it's only going to make things worse. However, you are under the care of a medical professional for at least 48 hours if you were to have a child in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not too sure about, you know, maybe private hospitals, but I don't think our public hospitals even screen for it.
Yeah, I don't think so. That's amazing.
But that's really the one of the earliest places that we can even catch it. But I think, you know, if you were to have a midwife, you know, or things like that, you know, they're trained more to support your mental health, you know, through the birthing process. But people don't bring their midwives with them to the hospital. So it's,
right.
You know, it's going to be either or. But you could have a mental health therapist, you know, throughout all of that, you know, and that could remain, you know, a constant for you throughout that journey. And, you know, if things do, you know, fluctuate, you know, at least you already have a professional there that can make the contacts for you or can do some of the research for you and say, hey, well, this might be a good fit for you, or research this or look into this a little bit more.
That's amazing. Where can people find you? We've got to get your information out there so people can locate you. Can you share your website, your phone number?
Yes. So office number is area code 915-296-6888. That is the office number. Our email address is elevatedhorizonsmentalhealth@gmail.com. All one word, no periods or anything, just Elevated Horizons Mental Health at gmail.com. And to book with me, it is https://provider.kareo.com/Alexis, A-L-E-X-I-S. - McCray, M-C-C-R-A-Y.
All right.
Yes, so I see individuals, I see children, I see teenagers, and I do cognitive behavioral therapy, hypnotherapy, parent coaching, and group therapy will be coming soon.
I love it. I will be sharing your information as well, so I'll send that information out on LinkedIn and on Facebook. And if you all need it, then of course you can reach out to me, and I will be happy to share that. It's Demetra at Gordavi, GORDAVILLC.com. So what's next for you, Miss Alexis? What's next on your plate? I've heard that you are a writer, so anything coming with that?
So upcoming, I would like to expand and do more activism, and I would like to write. I don't know if it's going to come in the form of, you know, a blog or, you know, an e-magazine, but I do want to find a way to express myself in another way, because as a therapist, I don't talk about me. You know, that time it's for my client. So there's a lot that I don't get the opportunity to share. And, you know, there's a lot of education to be shared and knowledge to be shared as well, that I also want to, I want to contribute, you know, to the activism and reducing the stigma and mental health as well. So currently I am the chair of the El Paso County Veterans Advisory Board. And with that, we propose policy changes of, regarding veterans affairs. And, you know, we facilitate events in the community for veterans. My focus has been on uniting and getting benefits for women veterans. You know, but I also want to get into, you know, of course, down the line, get into potentially writing a book and, you know, having a nonprofit, taking part in that as well. And, you know, of course, expanding the mental health practice, and be able to give my clients tangible things that they can actually leave with and things that are really going to be life-changing for them.
That's wonderful. You know what? And it's going to happen for you. It's going to happen. I am so grateful that you have shared your time with us this evening. I really appreciate it.
Yes, it has been a blessing to be here. And I thank you for sharing your platform, and thank you for making space for me as well.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Daisy, do you have anything before Alexis signs off here?
I just want to say thank you, and please feel free to call us and say, can I come back on?
Yes,
we will welcome you, so don't feel like, you know, this
I would love to come back. One-stop
thing, you know. It's not one-stop show, so
yes, I think we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, see if our schedule is free, or see if we can put you in with something else, you know, because we will definitely make room. Because like I said, this is something that we need. And I do believe that we also need to hear from our producer, our executive producer, the executive producer, the CEO, the chairman of the board.
That's right.
Well, ladies, congratulations to all of you. Thank you so much for your service protecting the freedom that we so carelessly take for granted. I want to commend you all for your voice and your courage. We do understand that 22 service personnel commit suicide each day. That is why our philanthropy in helping curb those numbers is active at GumbleForTheSoulInternational.com. We invite your presence to our anthology, Suicide is Not the Answer. We want to thank you and invite your presence to return to this show this month on February 23rd for another episode of Call to Serve. Demetria and Daisy, phenomenal job. Thank you, guest Alexis McCray.
Thank
Enjoy you. The balance of your evening.
Yeah. You, thank likewise.
Y'all be blessed.
Like they say, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Good night.
Tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for
for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, there ain't no doubt.